Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. Our three-man booth is about to become four as we get ready for Tim Fitzgerald a little bit later in the program here. So we'll get connected with Fitz as we make our way through. Fellas, we were talking there about the Royals, and let's do that for a second now here. As Glasser kind of likes the Royals as a home underdog, getting that plus money. That's been a fruitful bet. Real quick, before we get to Fitz, I would ask you, Tommy, are you in on that bet? I'm in on that bet. It's paid a lot of money this postseason.
I'm in on the bet, you know, for sure, just because, you know, their backs are up against a wall. They've got to get the victory, and so I'm down on that for sure. I think that that's a really good bet for tonight, especially if we're just talking money line. I think that that's probably the way to go.
Yeah, we'll talk about it more as we make our way through the second hour. But let's make that three-man booth a four-man booth. We'll tell you that the IHOP hotline will open back up in just a few minutes at 869-1240. You can celebrate the weekdays with your new IHOP house faves. All your favorites, just $6 Monday through Friday. We do welcome in from GoPowerCat.com, publisher Tim Fitzgerald, joining the program as we get ready. Tim, we talked to our betting insider who is, you know, he does these shows all over the country. He's got a wide scope on these things. And he did say that, you know, right there along with the Oregon game, this was just from a fun perspective, his favorite game of the week. I agree with that. This should be a really fun game Saturday night. Hopefully, right, more fun than the last time the K-State team played at a 9:30 Saturday night window.
Yeah, late night football, mountain time zone, in the mountains. What could possibly go wrong? I have no idea. Yeah, you're right. And I think it's going to be more about mindset than, you know, for Kansas State to go out there and play well on the road, which they haven't done. So this team's got something to prove to itself as much as anyone else. So we'll see what happens. Colorado's a very confident program right now coming off that win at UCF.
You know, Fitz, the one thing about Colorado, regardless if they are good or if they are bad or if they are somewhere in between, we always know that there's a lot of noise, a lot of chatter. There's just, I mean, so much attention that is heaped on the Buffaloes program because of Coach Prime. Is there a conscious effort, do you think, from this K-State team to feel like they need to drown out any of that noise? And whether that is leading up to the game on Saturday or once you're actually in the middle of it, to just be able to focus on what you can control and try to tune everything else out?
Yeah. I mean, there is a lot of attention around this, and I think they do a pretty good job of that, actually. Tommy, I don't think this team has typically gotten distracted by outside noise, but, you know, I don't know.
When you look at K-State right now, I've got a question for you, Fitz. Just how important is a great game by DJ Giddens for K-State? Give me a sense of what does he need to get to for K-State to win this game?
Yeah, I mean, I think anytime DJ goes over 100 yards, it usually means good stuff for K-State. And that's been pretty commonplace over the last, 10 games, 11, 12 games. So that's really where it starts and ends with K-State. Can they run the ball on Colorado? Colorado feels like it has a really good run defense this season. Maybe they do, but this is going to be K-State's challenge. They got to control that line of scrimmage, and the best way to stop Shedeur Sanders, Travis Hunter, and all those offensive weapons is to make them stand on the sideline and watch you play football. I think K-State's running game is really going to set the tone for the rest of the game for the Wildcats.
Do you think, though, that they will do what they have done against some teams that where they really want to make sure they stop their own? Because Colorado didn't really run the ball, right? So K-State's inviting these teams to throw it on them, right? We know why. You get sacks, you get interceptions, you flip it around real quick. Colorado doesn't run it anyway. So they're not going to do. So I'm very curious to see what K-State does defensively, if they mix it up from what we've seen the last few weeks, because this is a pass first offense. I mean, that's what they want to do. Is it? I mean, maybe it's like Arizona and what Arizona does. Do we take anything from there? I just am trying to find like a similar game script that we can follow on this one.
What Colorado actually had a run game a little bit at UCF, and that's what really made them dangerous. And maybe they've realized that now. They've got to establish some semblance of a threat on the ground before they can start throwing it all over the field, and they did that a little bit better in Orlando. But, yeah, I mean, K-State's very common. Just take away their run game. That's what every defense coordinator wants to do. And if you're capable of doing that, it puts you at an advantage typically, but you're right. This team is accustomed to functioning without a run game. They've had struggles with that over the last year and a half until recently, and we'll see if that formula holds up. But, yeah, I think some of the stuff K-State did against Arizona is a bit telling. The difference here being Arizona really had one guy you had to worry about, and Colorado's got about three guys in terms of receivers you got to worry about. The most important being Travis Hunter, who's probably the best receiver in college football. If not, or that kid at Alabama's 1 and 2. This is a really talented team who has had some gaps and holes, and now those gaps and holes seem to be getting smaller, and this will be a really good test for Colorado as much as K-State.
Do you think, Fitz, that obviously there's been a lot that's been made of the return, or I guess quote-unquote revenge game for Dylan Edwards in this particular matchup? Do you think that's something that will be leaned into at all from a play calling perspective, or is that more external that, you know, everybody wants to see Dylan have a big game against his former team? Or do you think that they will deliberately try to find a way to get him even more involved in the offense?
Well, my theory is that Dylan needs to be on the field, not because he's going to be a great playmaker, but because everyone will be focused on him. And he becomes a really effective decoy just by his presence. Because if you played with him last year and you saw him transfer, there's no way you're not keeping an eye on him. One, you know how dangerous he can be. But number two, you don't want him to have a big night against you. I don't think in terms of the locker room or anything, his return's a big situation. But I do think it can be an impact on the field. But this doesn't change much my opinion on him at all. I mean, I've thought K-State needs to get him on the field whether they let him touch the ball or not. And I think we've seen that have a great impact on defenses when they just kind of overload with trying to stop all those weapons.
You know, Fitz, I'm going to make a confession to you. I mean, I wouldn't do this for anybody else on the radio.
Oh, boy.
But because it's you, I'm going to. Last year, I had a man crush on Coach Prime. I think America had a crush on Coach Prime. This year, not so much. This year, I don't have that same man crush. But I can tell you this: I think the potential for Colorado is still better than it was last year. This could end up being a very good football team. And how much fun do you have watching Travis Hunter? That kid is amazing.
Yeah, Coach Prime is Coach Prime. You know, he just that it's who he is. Nobody's going to change him. You know, don't even bother asking. And you know, he's gonna argue about the meaning of words with media, and they're gonna ban media members. And you know, there's some flaws in the system. I would say with Coach Prime, but overall, if you look at it from the big picture, the football team's improving. And the university has absolutely exploded in popularity with enrollment and all those other things that come with his presence. It's absolutely incredible what just hiring him has done for the University of Colorado in terms of both enrollment and revenue for merchandise. Their TV ratings are through the roof. He's an intriguing story. He's a really intriguing character because we haven't seen someone like this before that comes out and says, you know what, I know what the guidelines are to be a coach. I'm going to do it differently. I think it's kind of cool. You should stop and go find his what he said about Dylan Edwards at this week's press conference, and I think it'll kind of soften up the edges on what you see from Coach Brian.
What did he say? What is the synopsis of that?
He's not upset with him at all. Yeah, he loves the kid. He's known him his whole life, and you know, he doesn't mind kids when they leave as long as they do it the right way and handle it, you know, in an adult manner, and then leave and focus on what they've got to do at the next stop and not keep talking about Colorado. And Dylan's done it the right way. So I'm glad to know that they're, you know, basically lifelong friendship or connection, you know, Dylan's life, hasn't faded because of the transfer. And I think that's really good.
Fitz, I want to have you predict something here real quick. Oh, sorry, Tommy. So, no, this is a simple one. So we've seen every week Avery Johnson has thrown the ball more each game. 21, 23, 23, 28, 31 in attempts. Feels like this needs to be the game that trend continues, right? That's how Colorado beat UCF. They cut the UCF going into that game was averaging like something absurd, like 375 yards on the ground a game, and they cut it in half. I think this is that if you're ever going to make an Avery throw first game plan, this feels like the one to do it.
I don't necessarily agree. I think KC needs to try to establish that.
Well, they're going to run the ball, but throw it more than 31 times. I think you might need to in this game.
I got to tell you, as I look back at that UCF game, I'm just not sold that UCF's run game was ever that good. I mean, I think it's good. Don't get me wrong, and I think Colorado did a nice job, but I think those stats were gaudy as based on some of the opponents they played, and they just kept running the ball and running up those numbers, and it was impressive, but it was kind of fool's gold too. I think KC's probably got to be a run first team, but I also think if they fall behind at all, those passing numbers will go up, and if Avery settles into a groove like he did against Oklahoma State with the run pass combination, they'll open that offense up. They're going to be cautious at first because he's had problems on the road, and we'll see how this shakes out.
I think following up on that, Fitz, my question that I was going to mention before was really about Avery and how, whether it's fair or not, there's going to be this comparing and contrasting on Saturday night between Avery and Shedeur Sanders. And, of course, with what we've seen Sanders do really this season, and he's been the big offensive key. And I know Travis Hunter is the best wide receiver in college football, but really it's been Shedeur that has propelled their offense forward this season. So that's going to be talked about, I'm sure, a lot during the game and comparing both of those guys. For Avery, I know that that's not something that he's going to be thinking about, but is there something that you want to see from him that, you know, when the game is all said and done, maybe not even necessarily for people to say, oh yeah, Avery is better than Shedeur, but maybe more like Avery is one of the top quarterbacks in college football alongside Shedeur?
Yeah. Once he kind of relaxes and does his thing, I mean, mixes in that run with the throw, he just becomes so dangerous. Shedeur is an amazing quarterback because he can function without an offensive line. I mean, he basically had to do that last year. He was constantly running for his life, trying to throw the ball. And I think that made him really good at operating under pressure. He went through a whole year of running for his life and still being effective as a quarterback. I think that's pretty tantalizing. And now Avery has to kind of prove the same thing, that when they come after him, they're going to pay a price. And that's kind of what this battle's about in many ways, can the quarterbacks make plays in the face of pressure?
You know, Fitz, I guess, you know, Jacob touched on something that makes me think, gives me pause, and that is playing in the mountains, playing at night. The last time K-State played at 9:15 at night, it didn't go so well, and that was also in the mountains. What's K-State doing to overcome? If this is a problem for this team, which I don't know if it is, it may not be, I don't know. But are things being handled a little differently for a kickoff at 9:15 at, 5,500 feet elevation?
I don't know. you know, I'm not necessarily thinking that what happened at BYU is time related, other than the fact that it just all the chances all just fell to, you know, all the odds fell in BYU's favor, that DJ Giddens has now lost one fumble in his entire career. It was at BYU. K-State gave up a 91-yard punt return off of a muff punt, and they don't do that, but it was at BYU. And there was just kind of this convergence of bad things. And I don't think it was necessarily time-related. But with that said, we're not really certain, because they were kind of knocked out by halftime, or at least early in the second half. So they didn't really have to play meaningful football late at night, if you know what I mean. They were kind of done by the time it got really late. So it's going to be interesting. Mostly it'll be interesting for me, because as you guys just saw, I slept in today. I'm trying to adjust my clock. I stayed up late. I'm preparing. I didn't coach Kleiman understand that I'm getting in my reps.
Now, are you going to the mountains again, Fitz?
Oh, yeah. I'll be heading out there tomorrow at this time. We're going to depart at 10 a.m. and get on down the road and get out there so we can sit around all day Saturday and watch college football.
You know, Boulder, Colorado is known for some things. So
it's at altitude. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They've got, apparently they got buffaloes just roaming around.
Here. Uh-huh.
That's what I think it's known for.
I would have thought the Rockies would have been rockier.
Yeah. Well, you know,
that John Denver.
He's full of something.
Yeah.
Come on, guys.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh my god. Well,
good luck with all of it. All of the joys of being out in the Colorado mountains there, Fitz. What do you guys have going at GoPowerCat.com for us?
We're back into, you know, it's great having game week, because it kind of constructs itself. The PowerCat pregame podcast is up right now. We'll have the Friday walkthrough. We've got plenty of VIP stuff for our customers that are behind the paywall. Just our settled into our weekly game week coverage, and it's a lot of fun. It's all laid out right now at Go PowerCat.
Go check it out. You can follow him on social media at Life of Fitz, GoPowerCat.com. All the best K-State coverage. Fitz, we appreciate it. Safe travels. We'll talk again next week.
Thank you, boys.
There goes Tim Fitzgerald. I appreciate his contributions always to the program. This portion of the program brought to you by Crestview Country Club. A lot of golf out there. A lot of great menus. I saw, Tommy, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to swing it, the menu special this week, by the way, for Crestview. I always like to look at those. Let me pull this up here real quick. How good does this sound? Now, I don't know if you're a fish guy, but it is a blackened swordfish with mango salsa served with coconut rice and vegetables.
I like it on. I'd be down for that.
Hey, I'm
really
down
good.
For it, too. Lunch today, I've taken on you. Lunch today, come on. Yeah, I'm ready to go.
On Savage. Yeah, lunch on Savage.
that kind of switched on me, didn't it?
Yeah. All right. So that's there. The great restaurant, great bar. We appreciate Crestview for their support of the program. All right. When we come back, we're gonna talk a little more Royals, fellas. Let's look ahead to game four. We've gone through game three. It's in the trash can. It's on to game four now. Trying to get this series back to New York. We gave you a bird's eye look at it. We'll dig in deeper when we return on Sports Daily.
.975 and 1240 KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily on KFH. Glad to be here with you on this Thursday. We've had back-to-back guests, so we'll open the IHOP hotline back up for you right now, 869-1240. You can leave us your video comments as well. And we'll set up our Wichita Thunder hockey ticket giveaway. They're back, home against Kansas City, Friday, October 18th, next Friday. KFH wants to hook you up with some tickets to enter. Just text the word Thunder right now to the number 20357 for your chance to win a pair of tickets from us here at KFH. Message and data rates apply. That's Thunder to 20357 for a pair of tickets to the home opener. Welcome back in, fellas. Tommy, you just sent me this, and now my brain is racked. So we'll get to the Royals in just a second. Tommy just sent me something. I guess Oklahoma State concert to raise money for NIL, headlined by Cross Canadian Ragweed, Turnpike Troubadours, Jason Boland and the Stragglers, Stoneleigh. Basically, you know, my wheelhouse of growing up, the kind of So it's like a perfect fit, by the way, and it's been a wild success. I guess they've raised millions of dollars. Every school across the country ought to be doing things like this. But a perfect fit for the fan base. And we're sitting here with 30 seconds, like trying to like make light of like where, okay, so if we know that, like if you're trying to like fit the perfect, you know, type of music and bands to a certain like stereotype of what a school is, you could basically cherry pick that exact concert and put it in Manhattan for K-State. And it'd be what would you bring to Lawrence? I said the Grateful Dead. Like I'm trying to like what concert would you do to like fit the stereotypes of the fan base?
It would be a singer songwriter. I think combo, like a lineup of just everybody like that
Bob
is like
Dylan.
Yeah, like a Bob Dylan. You know, maybe like a like Bob Marley was still alive.
I thought of Bob that would, Marley.
I mean, like
thought...
one of the sons, like Ziggy Marley could perform. Like that would probably do pretty well.
Right, right. You would think,
I'd be down for that.
Yeah. I was thinking 311. They played 311 quite a bit.
That would be
back
that'd
in
be
the
good.
Day.
Yeah.
Yep. I've seen 311 a few times. And a few of those times have been interesting. I love 311. You'd have to. Yeah, that's a good genre too. Like lit. Or, you know, that Third Eye Blind, like, you know, whatever we were listening to when we were wearing hemp necklaces.
I could see the Dave Matthews Band drawing well in Lawrence. Yeah. That would be a good show.
Yeah. We'll have to. Maybe that's a fun game sometime. What a good idea, though. Seriously, every school across the country ought to do this, because if you're the bands and you want a great atmosphere that'll sell out and do all that stuff, these kinds of little festivals, that would be a blast.
You bet it would.
Good on Oklahoma State for being ahead of schedule on that.
By the way, speaking of NIL, real quick before we get to the Royals, Juju Watkins, did you guys see about her contract? Signed a big deal. Now listen, she's in college. She's at USC. Now, of course, she's probably now without Caitlin Clark in women's college basketball, she's probably going to be the face. Tommy, don't you think Juju Watkins will probably end up being the face of college basketball this coming year? I think that would be the case. Nike signed her to a reportedly multi-million dollar deal for NIL while still at USC, and that's pretty.
And Gatorade, I guess I'm seeing. So here's why I think that's really smart, and I was surprised that Caitlin Clark's shoe deal. I feel like that's the next frontier for women's basketball is shoe deals, and I say that because I coach my daughter's basketball team. One of them, I know how much the sport is exploding. Why wouldn't you have their favorite athletes on your shoes if you were a shoe company? I mean, Caitlin Clark should have been one of the bigger shoe deals we've ever seen, in my opinion. I didn't think it was big enough, but that's good honor. Good honor. It's the new frontier, and get out there and make your money. But anywho, let's talk a little Royals here, fellas. Let's get predictive with this. We talked at the base level. We like the money line tonight. I do think it's in this team's DNA to not overthink this moment. I think, you know, not having any expectations helps, certainly. But also the personality of its two biggest stars, I think, feeds into that to some degree. Bobby Witt Jr., Salvador Perez, certainly Salvador Perez. I think this has a chance to be a big Salvi game, by the way. I think if Bobby Witt Jr. has one of those epic historic games, it'll come in a game 5 in New York. I think this is a Salvi game to me. And I think the Royals will take it back to New York. And I think that's where Bobby Witt has his big moment.
You posed the question in the first hour about if the Royals are built to feel pressure. And, you know, I think that generally speaking, sure, like you're going to feel pressure just because of the stage that it is. Anybody is going to. It's natural to feel that. But anything like above that or beyond that, I'm not sure that that's the case because I think that it's pretty clear that the Royals have felt like they're playing with house money. I know that's kind of a cliche coming to this time of the year, but with the way that the regular season ended, and it wasn't great for Kansas City, if we all recall that, I think that there was a moment where they probably felt fortunate to even be in the playoffs because it wasn't confirmed. It wasn't clear until the very end that they were even going to make it in. They played loose. They played free against Baltimore. That's why they swept them in the wild card round. And then in this round, I have not seen, outside of individuals, like I mentioned Vinny Pasquantino earlier in the show, individuals I think are pressing a little bit that maybe are not performing up to standards, but I don't get the sense that that's an overall team, Like, I don't think the team is pressing necessarily. I just think it's kind of individual contributors. So I'm not super concerned about, you know, the them feeling this pressure that might be paralyzing or crushing or impact the way that they play tonight.
Yeah, it's not the way they're built. Paul, you've been in locker rooms forever. I do think there's a difference when you are the underdog in these situations. And house money is a cliche, but it's a cliche because it's true. The Yankees are not playing with house money. The Phillies were not playing with house money. The Dodgers will not be playing with house money.
That's right.
There is intrinsic pressure on the expectations of those teams going in. Mm-hmm. There's not a person on the planet who wouldn't say this has been a wildly successful season, who would say they are any kind of, I mean, you might be disappointed that the season ended, but this is a Cinderella story, and let's not forget it. And this team is a Cinderella team, and it fits, right, Paul? Like that does, and that doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean they're going to beat the Yankees because of that. Sometimes the better team or the better team on paper just wins and they build up to their own pressure. But as we look at this one, the Royals are sort of built for moments like this to have their back. They had their back up against the wall in that game last night. Mm-hmm. When the Yankees went up 2-0, that was a great opportunity for the Royals to crumble. And they didn't. Mm-hmm. They bounced back in a 2-out rally and got those runs right back. And yeah. I think that's sort of a microcosm of what this team is, bigger picture.
Right. And there's a lot of factors in this game that you might think, well, they'll come into play. But you're right, because they're playing with house money. I like that phrase because I think that's apropos to the situation. You know, you're playing in the house that Ruth built. Well, it's not the actual house, but you get my drift. The house, you know, New York is a tough place to go. It's a great environment. The place is going to be sold out. There's no question about that. And it all comes down to two players. We talked about this a little bit in the first hour. It's going to come down to two players, I think, that for the Yankees. If Juan Soto and Aaron Judge have great games, it's going to be a tough situation for the Royals to overcome. But so far, so good with those guys. I mean, Soto's had his good moments, but you know, you shut those guys down for most of the game, and you have a shot. And that's what the Royals are thinking. House money, baby.
I think
it's house money.
Yeah, I think the other thing that I've thought about a lot going into this game is there have been comparisons most of the season between the 2014 Royals team and this year's Royals team. And I think that you can make another comparison here, because if you recall, when the Royals made that run to the World Series and ultimately lost to the Giants, every team, or most of the teams that they faced in the postseason, they were, you know, the opponent was expected to win that series. Now, ultimately, the Giants did, but the pressure was on the Giants. I mean, remember, like, they had won 2 years before. They had won 4 years prior to that.
They were winning every other
year. They were winning every other year in the World Series, and so the expectation was that the Giants would just continue to do that in even years. In the 2010s, that's what the Giants did. So the expectation was on them to win the World Series. They did. It was a situation where the better team on paper won. And we're talking we're talking World Series versus we're talking World Series versus the ALDS. Like it's different, you know, altogether. But there are some other comparisons here where, you know, each team that the Royals would be facing up against in the postseason probably have larger expectations than what the Royals had going into this year. Mm-hmm. And so I do think that that is a comparison, because that was the same way that it was 10 years ago. But then, of course, remember what they did the very next year. So, again, I'm not saying that it's a foregone conclusion that Kansas City gets bounced tonight or that they lose in Game 5. I mean, that we could be having another week plus of Royals baseball, even longer than that, potentially. They've got to get these next two games, but if they don't, I think that it won't be because they crumbled under pressure, because I don't think that overwhelming pressure exists. I think the better team on paper beat them.
Right. It might be because Garrett Cole is Garrett Cole,
right,
and Aaron Judge is Aaron Judge.
And Giancarlo Stanton last night was Giancarlo Stanton.
Who again, one of the best postseason hitters of this generation, gotcha last night. Okay. Not a huge deal. I agree with that. I think the other thing I think about with this team is, and it is a good comparison to look at 14 and 15, because 14 was less out of nowhere than this year has been. I actually really like that team. That was right when I moved here, was in the middle of that baseball season. I was kind of big on them before. So they weren't without expectations that year like they are this year. But I do think there was a fear that that was like a one-year wonder kind of thing, and clearly it wasn't. And it wasn't even just those 2 years. It was probably about 4 years. This team, I think, is equipped, and from what we've seen out of the front office and ownership, I think you could have some confidence as Royals fans. This is not a one-and-done thing. Like, that sense of desperation doesn't need to be there either. This is a team that could be right back here next year. Again, don't put the cart before the horse. Right now, you got to go beat Garrett Cole at home in a game. I want to ask you guys this. Jazz Chisholm, you know, he had his lucky comments. You know, he said the team was lucky basically at the end of the game. And the Royals fans got after him last night, which is incredible. He said after the game, I ain't never seen anybody boo a bum. I loved every single second of it. Which he's right. Like, he's absolutely correct in that sentiment.
Is he, though?
I mean,
have you looked at his stat line in this series? I mean, I'm not calling him a bum. I mean, overall, Jazz Chisholm is a really good player. But, right. I mean, he hasn't really produced in this series, so maybe a bum in the last four games or three games.
I hope they're not poking the bear with him either. That also scares me a little bit. But I love that that has creeped into this, because it just kind of adds a little bit to that. I had people text me that aren't from, they were like, why is everybody booing Jazz Chisholm? Like, what is this beef with Jazz Chisholm? And I'm like, it's a, you know, it's kind of a postseason intensity where, but I love it. I love that it's there. It'll stay there today. And it adds to the flavor, gives you a little of the flavor of that Padres Dodgers series that seems to have all the drama right now.
And don't forget
a little bit of it.
Don't forget, by the way, if you go back to before the trade deadline, there was a lot of smoke that the Royals were going to trade for Jazz Chisholm, and that didn't happen. I mean, everybody wanted Chisholm on the Royals. And so I, you know, that may have something to do with it as well.
Yeah. By the way, I love your comparison with the Dodgers and the Padres right now. Sort of this is the same thing. I mean, you got the juggernaut New York Yankees and the best baseball record in baseball with the Dodgers taking on the Padres. It's kind of a similar deal. These are the two games where you've got an underdog.
A little bit, but the Padres had big expectations coming into this year.
Yeah, but they're still like facing the best baseball team in you know by record. It's the Dodgers
team money can buy, right?
I don't agree.
By the way, that the Dodgers are the best baseball team. They have the best lineup. They do not have the best pitching.
Well, okay. Well,
yeah, no, I know. But when we're talking about like best postseason team, I don't think that's. Well, I think their pitching is a problem. And like if they matched up against the Yankees, for instance, I think they'd have problems. The Yankees are really good. Austin says on YouTube, put $20 on the Royals money line, Salvi 2+ hits, walk of 5+ strikeouts. I like where your head's at, Austin, on that. I'd be a little cautious with Walker's 5+ strikeouts. The Yankees are strikeout prone, yes, but I think Cotrero is showing us a really short leash.
Yeah, how long is Walker going to pitch? I mean, if he was going to pitch 5 or 6 innings, then yeah, okay, 5+ strikeouts, I get that. But if he goes 3 or 4, that's going to be tough. And then on top of that, I mean, I don't mind the Salvi prop. 2 hits, I'd be, if it was a 1+ hit.
So here's, I like the 1+ hits, RBIs, runs.
Yeah.
So if you're going to go to 2, give yourself those options. That way, if he has an RBI single, you're there.
Yeah.
But
or if he walks. You know, and he gets on base and he scores a run.
Right. And I did learn, by the way, and I learned a hard lesson that when you see the bases props in there, walks do not count for that. That cost me a big bet. I did not know that. And I was madder than hell at that. And I think it's bogus and total crock, but that is the case. Be careful with that one. It'll be good. And again, if Walk is pitching in the 5th inning of this game, I think it's a really good sign for the Royals. If he is out there as the 5th inning starts, I think you've got good things happening for the Royals in this game.
That's going to be the absolute key, is watching how long he can pitch and how successful he is in the first few innings of the game. Because if they can get 5+ innings out of Waka, then at that point, more than likely, there won't be a need to go to Cole Reagans. That won't probably even be a thought.
I think it's just 4+.
And if the Royals can win and Waka goes 5+ innings, 4 to 5, longer than that, you have an off day on Friday. You go to New York on Saturday. You're not going to probably, because I mean, it's not ideal. The Royals threw like what, 9 pitchers last night? Like, it's not ideal. I think the term that Costas used was like all hands on deck, and that's definitely what it has been for the Royals from a pitching perspective. You get to kind of reset that bullpen a little bit with the day off, the travel day going to New York, and knowing that if Waka pitches well and he's able to exit with the lead, you may not have to lean on your relievers quite as much as you had to last night.
I think that they'll still be prone to use them quickly. But I agree with you. The Friday thing makes everybody available again, except Reagans. And I don't even know if Reagans is an option. I have no idea. I haven't looked or skimmed through the, you know, the post game quotes to know. And probably Quatraro wouldn't even tell us if he was, but I would think he would be in an emergency. This feels like a game where you may see multi-innings out of Urcig, who did not pitch last night, right, and who gets a day off tomorrow. He's probably a come-in-the-eighth-inning option, I would guess, in this game, which is good. That opens up your possibility.
I bet Quatraro will, if they're in a position for this, Quatraro will use Urcig in the same way that Aaron Boone used Luke Weaver last night.
Absolutely.
Like, get the 5-out save. That's the way that they would utilize him tonight.
And I wouldn't be scared to use Bubic again. I know he went multi-innings in game two, and then he pitched again last night, but there was a game off, or there's a day off between there. I wouldn't be afraid to use him again. So if you're willing to use Bubic again, and you know Urcig can go two, that's 3 innings. Now you're down to 6, right? If Waka can get you into the 5th inning, which means he's completed 4, they'll be fine. They'll be just fine. All right. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. Albrock, Savage, Caster. We'll have more Sports Daily right after this. All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. Albrock, Caster, Savage, glad to be here with you on this Thursday. Coming up tomorrow, by the way, we've got some special in-studio guests, Adam and Jessica Hadwin. PGA golfer Adam Hadwin, who spends half his year now in Wichita, is a Wichitan. He and his wife have a big event coming up here. What are we looking at, Tommy? A couple of weeks away?
Yeah, coming up on October 27th. It's the Hadwin Family Foundation. And actually, so some news here, that they're now permanently in Wichita.
Oh.
So not even just half of the year. They're here all the time now, which is really cool living here. And so they've got a big charity event called Tees for Tots that is at Topgolf on October 27th. And so we're looking forward to talking to them.
That's going to be a lot of fun tomorrow. So just tune in for that tomorrow. They'll be in studio and they have that event. We'll have the details on that coming for you tomorrow as well. He had a really good year. He was in a lot of tournaments last year. That I love that. You know, when we've got local golfers to follow along with the PGA Tour, kind of gives you a little incentive to tune in each and every week. So that interview will come for us tomorrow.
Sounds like maybe Royals, a guest Friday football picker. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I didn't even think about that.
What if we just kind of held him over and well, let's just see if he knows anything about football.
It's kind of like a college game day. You got the celebrity pickers coming in.
You're kinda starting like to think like I'm thinking. Yeah. Attaboy, Tommy. Good. What do you guys think? Well, bouncing off
we'll
of
see.
Tomorrow, you big wigs.
We'll
do
see.
That.
We'll see if we can push some buttons here. See if that Canadian knows anything about football. We'll put the challenge out. But more of those picks coming tomorrow. I'm on a heater, boys. I don't know what the numbers were last week. I can't ever remember who I picked. I just know my wallet's been good. I hope it continues tonight with Thursday Night Football. Real quick with Thursday Night Football. Tommy, you weren't here with PJ. I think this is one that, well, it's one to watch because the Chiefs get the Niners next week and they're kind of reeling a little bit. But I think it's one where the props are going to be good. I don't know if I like it to go over 49, but I like a lot of yards in this game. And I say that because I think we're seeing that trend start to happen in the NFL where the defenses were way ahead to open up. It does feel like offenses are catching up a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's the case. And I know that the Seahawks have they feel a real opportunity here. I mean, knowing that they're 3-2, they get the 49ers when the Niners are dealing with significant injuries and have underperformed because of that. And so I think that you look at this from Seattle's perspective of, hey, it's a divisional game early on where there could very well be, you know, the Niners can get back to full health presumably fairly soon. I don't know what the overall status is of Christian McCaffrey and what that looks like long term for him and all of that, because I know there's a lot of uncertainty surrounding him. But the Niners, it's kind of, you know, unfortunate, I guess, from their perspective that this is when they face the Seahawks. The Seahawks can absolutely win this game. I think that they've shown that with some of the skill positions that they've got, especially at wide receiver, if Geno Smith has a good night tonight, I definitely think there's a real possibility that the Seahawks can win this game.
I think there is, but I like the Niners. I saw yesterday that the Seahawks have a ton of injuries defensively. We know about all the injuries to the Niners. That's kind of like, it's kind of why I like the offenses in this game. But we'll see. The Niners are 2-5. The Bengals are 1-6.
Two and three.
The Bengals are 1-4.
Yeah.
I would still consider both of those teams Super Bowl contenders. I think they're sort of the poster children of each conference's teams that don't, just not ready to count them out yet.
Maybe the like Niners.
Dallas, I'll count Dallas out. Dallas ain't doing it.
You ever look at the stats of the teams that make the playoffs that are 1-4? Like it's very, very, very slim that the Bengals can even make the playoffs. Not because that they're, you know, I think that they could be playing better 2 months from now than they are right now, but they've dug themselves a hole that historically it's been really hard for teams in the NFL to get out of to make the playoffs. So yeah, if they make the playoffs, sure, like they could go on a run, no doubt about it, but I'm not even ready yet to say that they could make the playoffs. I don't think they're a contender at all.
I know. And you know what's so crazy about that too is I think about those 1-4 starts. We got to remember a stretch too. There was a stretch last year. Well, there was definitely a stretch where the Chiefs would have been 1-4. After their bye week, they came out of the bye week and went, I think 1-4. Now,
not to start the season though. Like
that's what's so crazy about it. When I see things like that, and then I think I'm like, man, teams have rough stretches, but it does seem harder to overcome if it happens for whatever reason. If it happens early in the season, and like Cincinnati, think about who they've played in that stretch too. Like their schedule's been brutal. In this week against the Giants, they're only 3.5-point favorites against the Giants. So I don't know. I don't know.
Are you counting this Giants game as a brutal part of a brutal stretch for them? Because
no, I'm not. I'm saying I can't believe they're only 3.5-point favorites. I'm saying they finally get an opportunity to. Now their defense has been really, 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 really
bad. That's
and that may be their favorite.
That's why they're only 3.5-point favorites, because that defense has completely fallen off a cliff. What used to be, you know, one of the best defenses in the NFL has been really terrible this year.
Mm-hmm. Hey, you know, one of the things too about the 49ers, since that's the game tonight, one of the things that appear to me to be the problem, of course, obviously, is an injury to McCaffrey. That's a huge problem. Changes everything about him. Now, I'm sitting here trying to think, when was the last time I remember an injury having such a big an effect? Now, I'm going to take quarterbacks out. Let's not count quarterbacks, because we all know that, you know, you get a top-notch quarterback injury that can change the way a team plays, wins, losses, the whole thing. But non-quarterback positions, when was the last time an injury like McCaffrey affected a football team? I'm sitting here trying to think. I'm not even sure I can think of a time. I'm sure there is. I'm sure there have been injuries to position players other than quarterbacks.
Yeah.
But
yeah, like, man, I think
it's changed everything.
I think of like Saquon when he tore his ACL for the Giants. But like that changed everything for them.
And I don't have the exact number in front of me. Real quick on that, Jordan Mason's numbers through their first whatever it is, 5 games, are ahead of where McCaffrey's were last year through 5 games. I don't know what's going on with them, but I don't think it's that, because Jordan Mason's been really good. I mean, they've had a ton of other, and Debo's been out, Kittle's been out, they've had offensive linemen out, their defense is banged up. Just two teams we thought for sure were going to be Super Bowl contenders kind of stumbling out of the gates. What if the Niners don't win tonight?
I don't think they will. I like the Seahawks in this game a lot.
I just don't like all the injuries Seahawks have on defense this week. Man, it should be a fun one. I'm excited about Thursday Night Football. Put it right up there with the Royals. Here we go, boys. It's a good football, but it's a good sports night. We'll come back. We'll tell you about how you can hear some of these games next.